Apart from those two, Honorable Drachen, I think he will join us late. He's having a problem of the interpreter. Only one available. Honorable Van Damme, so we are still on apologies.
Just apologies from Honorable Davies. I know he's an alternate, but we all like to participate when we can.
Yeah, it's okay. Including just like Honorable Drachen, he's also the alternate. Honorable Kalako.
Apologies from Honorable Daly. Not arrived, we will repeat. He's preparing for his quite a big day of his life this weekend.
Okay, but can we, can the office of Secretary's office link up with the Secretary? Because we want the return apology. We know that the daughter is getting married this weekend. So he's preparing for that. But we must have that in writing. Nothing about Honorable Kongubele yet. Honorable Dolashe is around. I'm sure she's still getting lost. She's not familiar with these many meeting venues. Honorable
Kongubele is around. She was just in the study group of Public Enterprise. So you will join us shortly.
Can we we don't have any other apology. We can't have an apology verbally. So we don't have an apology. Because those who are coming late and all of that, those who are members of the committee, apologies must be in writing. The meeting is starting at 10. I don't know what you're going to say, but we don't have an apology. So that must be very clear, and we don't expect that from you, Mr. Wall. Can we accept the apologies that are written? For the alternates, it's not a problem. For those who are alternates, even if they are not written, but the practice, they must be written. But other apologies that are not in writing, we cannot accept, including that of Honorable Sadie, until we have that apology, because it must be written. That's the standard rule, Honorable Members. Welcome, Honorable Dolashe. Now, before the presentation, I just want to start with welcoming you from the recess and the oversight and all of those things that kept us away from Parliament. But in that process of being away, doesn't mean that we were not working. Particularly the office of the chairperson, I think political parties as well. On the issue of the SABC board, because I think that's what got us talking all the time. You will recall that we, in Parliament, we presented our recommendation on the 6th, was it the 5th? The 5th. On the 5th of September. After such a very tedious process of going through the names of those who applied or nominated. We worked 12 hours a day so that we can finish the 36 shortlisted candidates. And we're able to present to Parliament in good time. That was on the 5th, and Parliament accepted our proposals or our recommendation. Now we can we be in order, members? Can we be in order? We presented our recommendation to Parliament, and Parliament endorsed the 12 names that we presented. We did this after having checked each and every one of them. I'm trying to say what I said to media. We checked each and every individual of the 36 people. Done by the state security agency in terms of a security check. In terms of qualifications check, it was done by HR using their company, which is doing that, and the report was presented to all of us before we went to Parliament and present our recommendation. We did this because we knew that on the 26th of September, the life or the term of the interim board is coming to an end. And by 12 midnight on the 26th, they were out of office. And therefore, on the 27th, it meant we didn't have a board in the SABC. Because we are not appointing the boards, we do what we must do as the committee and leave it to Parliament to communicate with the President's office, which we did. And I think, and this is what we have communicated to media, that today is the 3rd of October, and we still don't have a board in the SABC. So the matter is between the Office of the President and Parliament. We're a committee of Parliament. The Speaker's office is supposed to link up with the President. All what we did, looking at the time before the 26th, we communicated with the Office of the Speaker and checked progress, all what they did. Their response was that they do have a letter acknowledging their submission as the Speaker's office. Over and above that, they don't have anything. And I felt I must say this because I think it's correct to take the committee on board on this matter, because it's a matter that is concerning, and I think South Africans, including myself, as a chair of the committee, because as we speak, we don't have a board. Yes, we do have the minister, but we don't have the board. So that's where things are, honorable members. And I think on our part, we have done what we need to do. I think I should have stayed. I thought I should have. I must state this so that we are all aware of what is going on. That's from the committee's side. And I thought at some stage we'll have to give the minister, because she's in charge of some of the issues, but also herself is not appointing. The appointing body is the president, as the president. I thought maybe just before we get on it, we give it to stay, I mean, a chance to the minister to take us on board on what is happening now from the executive point of view. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. As a department, we had started doing some work with regards to ensuring that by the time this process unfolds to its logical conclusion, we would have assisted in assisting with some of the information, additional information that would be required. We had taken into account, and this is what the president as well is taking into account, the fact that he has at some point also been caught with egg on his face. If you remember, with the last appointment of the previous board, there were issues of qualifications. And also, I think it was in the MDDA, there was also the issue of Mr. Sitting Dindin as well. And he just felt that his office felt that we should have provided all of that information in assisting him to append his signature to the minute. And we did not do it because we had thought that as the appointing authority, his office would do that. So I will take responsibility to the extent that the department should have really gone ahead with that, so that in the event that these questions get raised, we're just able to provide the information regardless. But you will understand how tedious it is, and to the authorities that you will be going back to ask for information, that two departments are running parallel processes. So we're very mindful of that, because that has been brought to our attention before, that it is not our process, because we have no legislative directive on the matter. But we then also panicked when we realized that we get into the 26th, I think it was, or the 27th, and we raised the issue again, and we were told that we were supposed to have provided this information to the presidency. It is at that point that we really started working. The information currently is before SAQA, and they had indicated that in the next 2 days we'll be able to get full information on the verification of qualifications. They did not say to us that Parliament has verified the qualifications. They said that they would do it, but there's a problem as well that they're facing, where an individual has not submitted the matric certificate, but in the CV, it is indicated that they have a matric. And my initial reaction was, I mean, honestly, if a person has got a degree, a degree, why really do you need the certificate? And I think that's the problem that we are so fixated on a matric certificate when there are qualifications that are of a higher level than a matric certificate. But what we were informed was that the reason why they want the matric certificate, if a person says they have, is because if that matric certificate was obtained fraudulent, it has an impact or effect on the rest of the qualification. And my question was, you know, but even then, if you have, I mean, people use recognition of prior learning without a matric certificate to do their degree. But the point was, if it is fraudulent, there's a problem with that. So if you say you have a matric certificate, you have to produce your valid matric certificate so that it can also be verified. So that was the response that was given by SAQA. Hence the delay, because there is no matric certificate for some of the other people. But obviously, one way of doing this would be to go ahead with appointment pending the outcome of the verification process, which includes the matric certificate for those who said they have a matric certificate. So basically, that's what the issue really was, because we know that there was pre-screening done by state security, which we really do not have a problem with. But it was really on those matters where President has been caught with everyone's face, on the appointment of people with fraudulent or questionable qualifications, and also with the criminal record that was not brought up during the parliamentary process.
Yeah, that's the report update from the side of the committee, and then what's going on now, the report from the minister. Members, Honourable Fonda.
Thanks, Chair. I appreciate the feedback from your side, and I think your position is absolutely correct. We, from our side as Parliament, we sat for 12 hours a day. We made sure that we met deadlines. We conducted all the necessary checks. I do appreciate to a certain extent that the President would want to conduct his own checks, but those checks should have been done within the 3 weeks that he had. Given the serious issues at the SABC, given the fact that there's only acting leadership, these issues of the bailout, the situation should not have been allowed for the SABC to be without a board, without a vanguard to protect it against capture. I'm afraid those are the facts. This is the history that we come from the SABC being captured and being looted because the right people weren't in the right positions. So it is really unsatisfactory that the checks were not conducted in those 3 weeks. But if the undertaking is that in the next 2 days, the process will be complete and we will have a board, I am happy with that, as long as it will be done in the next 2 days. But we must register our dissatisfaction that the checks did not happen in the 3 weeks. I don't think there's a problem with the President saying, I just want to double check. It's absolutely fine, but it must be done within those deadlines. We met ours, he must meet his.
Thank you. Honorable Dolash and then Honorable Kalako.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. I think let's welcome the explanation from yourself as well as from the Minister. I think we are all concerned. I'm sure that's why the Minister indicated to say they nearly got to a space where they weren't supposed to. It means we are all committed in wanting to do the right thing. However, it is not in our authority, all of us here. It is in the President's office now. The minister is committing to say, and she hopes in the next 2 days, this matter will be concluded. Let's allow that, Chairperson. At least we are all here. We've communicated our stance where we are, so there are no mistakes or problems between the two of us here. All we are waiting is the office of the President to do what is expected of the office to do. I think let's allow that and wait, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just, I'm covered. It's just to make sure if I might have heard the minister not the same way other members. You are saying in the matter of 2 days, you'll get information which will put you in a position to go back to the presidency for appointment of those two, and then the board is in place. Now, I wanted that because that will be the question now, which will come back to you, Chair, and to you, Minister, and to us in the committee. So I wanted just to clarify that.
Okay.
Madam
Kumbek.
No, my short, Chair, is that I don't want to repeat what has been said by other members. I wish it was possible, Chair, in pursuit of accountability principles, with an intention to be a competent and a reliable government, that it could be explained by those responsible why it took 2 weeks. because there's no debate on whether it should be done or not. I wish we could find a way. Because can you imagine if it was 4 weeks, it was 5 weeks? We were going to say because in 2 days it's going to be done, it's fine. The point I'm making is that there are issues of legality that are threatened, and I think as committee, it is correct to find out why it took 3 weeks when in our situation it hardly took, I don't think it was a week to do it. It's been done by the similar hour to call people. Maybe it's important to get that explanation, because in as far as I'm concerned, as Parliament, we're entitled to that accountability.
Okay. Obviously, we can't expect that from the minister, because that must be done by the president's office. But maybe what we can do is to assist, speed up the process. But if minister does have anything, but I think that's the call of the president's office.
Chairperson, I just wanted to respond to the matter that was raised by Honourable Kalako, which is correct. The undertaking is from SAQA that in the next 2 days, you're correct, that in the next 2 days they will provide us with the information. But you must also remember that is also dependent on whether those who are supposed to provide them a proof of their metric certificates have done that. And the ball really is not in my court with regards to that. So as you say, I just don't want that after 2 days someone calls me and says, you said after 2 days. That's the undertaking from SAQA, which is also dependent on what is placed before them by the candidates, board members.
And that is in relation to the qualifications. But the security issues, I think the president's office is on board on those. It's an undertaking from SAQA, so minister will have to brief us, even if after 2 days she can brief us how far SAQA has gone. Honourable Kumbe?
No. The intention is not to belabor the point. I think we should be... what I want to say, maybe for the indulgence of the executive, is that it can't indefinitely depend on whether one avails his or her certificate or not. That's the point I want to impress upon. I think there must be a way in which we find ourselves within legality. Because if we go beyond, my worry is that there's a possibility of the current situation being illegal and rendered dysfunctional. All I'm saying is that I think in a way, I'm calling for the indulgence of the executive. They must be able to say, if within a particular period this is not found, therefore alternatives must be resolved. That's the point.
No, that's fine. Can we now go to the presentation from the staff? Thanks, members, for your comments on this matter. And I think all of us, we agree that things must be done and must be done within specified period. No compromise on the question of individuals in the board being screened and all of that, whether it's qualifications or security, so that we don't go back to where we were in the past. I think that position is correct, but the problem is time. The problem is time. It took quite a long time from the 7th of September. Over to you, Mbo.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister. Thank you for the opportunity. I think today's presentation from the support staff will try to sort of take a different direction in that we want to do a little bit of introspection on the committee and the processes of the committee leading to this particular check on annual reports from the department. So I'll first start by painting a picture of the economic downturn, focus more on the midterm review from the, from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, also look into the issue around the funding of the portfolio, and spend more time on the inward looking of the portfolio and the recommendations thereof, including those that were done as far back as 2015-16 financial year. And I won't touch much on the AG stuff because they are here, but I think there's some issues that I wanted to highlight for the purpose. As we know, Honourable Chair, that the National Development Plan is our roadmap towards the socio-economic transformation in the country. And as such, the DPME, Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, issued out a mandate paper which aims to guide all spheres of government and all government entities to refine plans and develop budget proposals. It has to consider, of course, specific functions and strengths of these institutions, as well as various pressures that they face. The objective, really, of the mandate paper is to establish the strategic framework for decision-making on budget priorities that are required to advance the goals of the NDP. And as stated in that particular paper, that for 2016, the economy has shrunk by more than 1%. And of course, that translates to declining average incomes for South Africans, impacting most severely on those at the lower end of the income distribution. So as I mentioned that the NDP is our roadmap, DPME then sought to sort of gauge how far has government gone to meet its targets. And as you can see from the graph that the growth, in contrast to the NDP targets of 5.4% per year for GDP and 2.9% for employment creation by 2030, basically we're quite underachieving in terms of what we want to achieve in as far as the NDP goals are concerned. So, but of course, the slowdown in the growth can be attributed to both global and domestic issues. The mandate paper, as I mentioned before, is a new sort of strategy for guideline for government to try and speed up the process of meeting the targets of the NDP. And as such, we only have 24 months left of this current administration, fifth parliament. And operating in a very constrained fiscal environment. And of course, the lack of adequate information systems in government to track progress towards NDP is one of the key issues. And I think the diagram is just starts to place the mandate paper within the framework of the NDP and the budget, which is the MTF. In terms of outcome for Dean, in terms of the outcome-oriented goals of government, there's 14 outcomes that are catalysts for successful implementation of the NDP. The NDP envisages an active citizenry that participates in the socio-economic life of the country. The department's work, therefore, focuses in particular on outcome 14, which is nation-building and social cohesion for the medium term. And for progressive attainment of nation building, of course, there's certain things that the mandate paper outlines to say need to be done. One being the populace must have a broad-based knowledge about the support for a set of values shared by all South Africans, constitutional values. These values provide a basis for new South African identity. Another one talks about redress, including language, economic, special, and cultural redress. The other speaks to increased interaction between South Africans from different social and racial groups for people to discover in each other a common humanity. It also talks about growing a strong leadership across the society, a mobilized and active responsible citizenry. And lastly, fostering the creation of a meaningful, sustainable social contracts, which could help South Africa onto a higher development trajectory. it's safe to say, Honourable Chair, that outcome 14 is a cross-cutting outcome and has an impact on all other outcomes of government, in that it inculcates a feeling of belonging, accountability and responsible behaviour, and is necessary to build trust, which is associated with stronger economic performance. The lack of expansion of the economy is placing a strain on employment and on budgets of government departments. But it still doesn't justify why such an important portfolio could be so underfunded. In fact, it's on record that ever since it was established, they've been underfunded ever since then. The DPME also issued out a midterm review looking at progress towards attainment of the NDP goals. And it was quite sad for me, Honourable Chair, to say that only in that particular review, only two of the entities of the department were mentioned. And one was ICASA for developing a code on persons with disabilities, and the other was the SABC for introducing the sign language. And I just thought I'd make that point up front to say that with such an important portfolio, you'd expect that in the review there would be more that is reflected of the work of the department in that instance. By its own accord, the department has achieved 76% of its plan targets for the year under review, and that's up from 63% for the 2015-2016 financial year. Some of the key achievements would be the extensive distributions of and installations of DTT set-top boxes. There was about 136,000 registrations, of which 38,000 were installations. And 18 analog transmitters have been switched off in the SKA area, and an MOU with the Department of Public Works on the training of set-top box installers with a budget of $4 million was also signed. And the department further held a two-day colloquium on print media transformation during the financial year. However, it's also important to note that the core function of the department, which is under Program 2, is one with least successful delivery. Out of six targets, only two of those were achieved. And of course, this could be attributed to many things, including the budgetary constraints. Furthermore, in 2015-16, the department committed to capacitating the supply chain management during the year under review, which is 2016-17, because those services were predominantly provided to them by GCIS, as with other services such as the office space and so forth. So I thought I'd highlight that perhaps the department would give us more information as to what happened to this particular commitment they made on the SCM. When we look at the budgeting of the department, Honourable Chair, you will notice that the budget, even though it's been, increasing nominally, the budget for the 2016-17 financial year was 1.349 billion, and it's an increase of about 58 million compared to 2015-16. All right, 91.3% of the department's budget over the financial year was allocated to transfers to state-owned companies and regulatory institutions in its portfolio, and that was down from 94% of 2015-16. Safe to say that the DOC spent 98.9% of its allocated budget, and underspending of about 1.04% comes up to about 13.9 million. And you'll notice that after the transfers to the state-owned institutions, the department is only left with 117.8 million for operations, of which 57.7% of which is dedicated towards compensation of employees. So enough on the funding. I'll go directly to the PCC, introspection. The graph you see on the screen is a graph that depicts the number of resolutions that the committee has taken since February 2015 to September 2017. And you'll notice that the green is the department, is the recommendations towards the department, which total 66 over the years, and recommendations to the committee itself are 47. And of course, all the other entities that we've interacted with, including DPME, which we've interacted about 7 times with them. We've had 7 recommendations for them. And also the Independent Publishers Association of Independent Publishers, which we had a recommendation for. Some of the recommendations, of course, have been responded to, but I'll get to the point where I want to focus on. The next graph is really a depiction of the recommendations to the committee by the committee. And you'll notice that I think it's October, we had about 9 recommendations to ourselves made to the committee. The reason I'm raising this, Honorable Chair, is really to start to have an inward look on how recommendations of the committee get processed to an extent that there is effective response to some of the recommendations. Some of them, like I said, are recommendations made by the committee in making commitments to resolving some of the challenges that are faced by the department. To give you an example, in this slide, I just highlighted a few of the recommendations that were made to the committee on September 16th. And you'll notice that the ones marked in red are those that we actually have not done much on. And of course, it points to the point of, which I'll talk to later, around programming and so forth. And you'll notice that the green is one that we actually managed to action. Also in this slide, you'll notice that some of them are green because we managed to action those recommendations, while some of them we have not necessarily actioned, although it's resolutions that were taken by the committee during a committee sitting. The last one, which is marked in orange, also highlights another problem that we have, that we'd make recommendations that in a way are not necessarily committing either by time or by action. So it becomes a recommendation that is, standing in air. These are some of the things that perhaps going forward the committee will need to refine so that we know that the recommendations that are made are actionable and are time-bound. I'll talk to more on that in this particular slide. What really I was trying to point at is that there needs to be a systematization of tracking of recommendations made by the committee. Firstly, we need to ensure that the recommendations are time-bound at all times, because as we know that sometimes you make a recommendation this year, you'll only hear about it in the 2018-19 financial year. Also, I think critical is that if the PCC expects the department and the entities to respond to recommendations, we should set the precedence first by ensuring that we implement all the recommendations that the committee itself takes upon itself. Furthermore, the protocol, what I say here is that the protocol defeats the purpose of the oversight model. By this I mean that while the process of recommendations is legislated, for instance, the committee writes meetings, holds meetings and makes resolutions in the meetings, the minutes are signed off by the committee, and the reports are also tabled at National Assembly through the House of the Speaker. But almost all the time, we never see the return path of these particular recommendations coming back to the committee so that we can tick whether they've been actioned or not. And I also think that perhaps part of the problem, challenge, is that the delay in us adopting, for instance, the minutes and some of the reports actually puts a pressure, puts a serious pressure on how those recommendations will be responded to by the department and the entities. So I think that it is a responsibility of this government, as one government, to ensure that there's proper coordination at all levels to enable the tracking and tracking of recommendations by both the ministry and the department in order to complement the work of the Speaker's office. As we know that the Speaker's office is always inundated. And why I made the example about the SABC is that the committee, like the chairperson said, we did all our processes in place, but the tracking of that decision all the way to the Speaker's office, all the way to the presidency, then becomes a cumbersome process. There is no dedicated resource from the support staff that deals purely on tracking of recommendations for the purpose. Looking back also into the 2015-16 budget recommendations, as I've indicated before, you will find that the committee does not get a chance to review whether the responses that are coming from the department and the entities in as far as the recommendations that have been made. I make a particular example here about a BSA study that indicated that citizens, 65% of the citizens of the population describe themselves as South African, and the other said 84% South Africans reflecting pride to be South African. But nowhere does this translate to, you know, a proper economic transformation models, so to speak. So it's all well and good to say there's 84% South Africans reflecting, but how does that translate into the economic transformation that the NDP envisages, especially for this particular outcome? Also, this was a recommendation that came up in the 2015-16 budget BRRR report, that the 2014-15 financial year BRRR report were not necessarily tabled to the committee formally. So, like I say, there still needs to be a systematic way on how we see how the department has responded to recommendations that are made by the committee. Otherwise, we'll keep falling into the same trap where things fall out of control because we did not track properly the recommendations. And this slide also talks to more recommendations that were made during the 2015-16 BRRR process, and I'm hoping that the department will somewhat, in their presentation, try to allude to these previous recommendations that were made by the department. I'll skip that. Okay, my last slide was really to talk to the audit outcomes of the department. And while the clean audit of the department is commendable in that it has managed to increase clean audits within its portfolio to 43% in 2015-16 financial years, of course more needs to be done to ensure that the entities that are still not getting the clean audits are also empowered to do so. Of course, it will become increasingly difficult to advocate for more funding if the department and its portfolio do not aspire to get clean audits across the board. And the last slide, as you will notice, I think the AG will do justice on the current fund and the year under review. This one is from 2015-16 financial year. But you'll notice the trend that on the yellow, it's always been the same departments that are, or entities that are appearing there, and that is namely ICASA, FPB, and MDVA. And whereas SABC has been consistently sitting at the bottom, probably worse, we'll hear from the AG. But I thought that it's imperative for the committee to schedule in its programming the progress of implementation of the SABC ad hoc committee recommendations, particularly those addressed to the committee. for this term, the committee has scheduled the Broadcasting Amendment Bill for deliberations. But I should still think that we should prioritize all the recommendations that were made by the ad hoc to the committee, in as far as ensuring that we can get the SAPC out of that red zone. I think it's all in the honourable members' interest to make sure that the SAPC does recover from that. But our starting point, of course, would be the recommendations of the ad hoc committee in totality, but with more specifics to the ones that were directed to the committee. In as far as the MDDA, I think in our last interaction last term, the minister did make a commitment to resolving the challenges of the MDDA, and as such had committed to providing the committee with a report, investigation report coming from this. So I'm sure the minister will talk to it some more. But I think that in as far as the committee is concerned, we probably need to up the programming to ensure that we get the MDDA to come as frequent as possible until they get clear out of the red zone. In as far as the FPB, the committee has scheduled a meeting with the minister to brief the committee on the status of the FPB. And it is also scheduled to deliberate further on the FPB amendment bill. So I think the committee does, in one way or the other, try to keep in touch with the progress of the entities. And I think that a similar approach to that of the SABC and the MDDA and FPB should be followed in order to ensure that ICASA also stays compliant. For this coming term, it's a fact that we've scheduled in our program the interviews for the ICASA Council. I think, Chair.
There you are, members. Anything that you want to understand more from the presentation? Or we just go straight to the department?
Yes, Chair, I thought this presentation is actually in a sense helping us to remind ourselves of our recommendations we actually made to the department based on our interface with the department throughout this financial year. So to me, I don't think there's really that much to discuss on this. It's information which you wanted just to be reminded.
Okay. No, if it's clear there is nothing you want to understand more, that was the intention. Thank you very much.
Yes, I'm ready. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, thanks for the opportunity to present today. By way of starting, I would like to introduce my team. I'm Alice Miller, Corporate Executive in the Auditor General. With me, I've got Kulani Zikwele and Jacob Rakoza that will also be presenting with me. So with your indulgence, Chair, we will share this.
Just hold on. Sorry? Do we have the ages report? Mm-mm. It's like this. Yeah. Yes. No. Everybody, yes. That's the one. Everybody has it. Check your documents, members. Please check your documents. We don't have time. Sorry, AG, proceed.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. How we will do the presentation is we're going to split it between the three of us, but it will be seamless, so we will just continue. I'm not going to hand over formally. Chairperson, we exist to strengthen oversight in the country, and today is part of that process where we're going to share the outcomes and some insights with the committee with the aim to assist you in doing your BRRR report. The committee staff has mentioned about the NDP. I think the NDP is also, it's important that the NDP is also positioned in terms of the sustainable development goals. He also talked about the medium-term framework and then how that finds its way into the APPs annually and how it finds its way into the annual reports. What is important for us is that when we spend money, it is ultimately to improve service delivery. So it's ultimately in the terms we use in our international standards for Supreme Audit institutions is to improve the lives of citizens. Now, the target that is in the middle of that presentation is not only clean audit. Clean audit is an enabler to us creating a better life for citizens in the country. And I think it's important that we just position that up front. So having a clean audit is a first start. Because we've seen also in government that where there's clean audit, service delivery is generally better. We have been to entities where there's disclaimers and adverse audit opinions where service delivery is definitely affected. So in this context, we then need to start and say, if we look at the portfolio, there's been a number of root causes that's been repetitive. And we therefore need to stop and reflect to say, if you look at the accountability cycle that says, let's plan, we do, we check, we act, where does it go wrong? Where does accountability fail in this accountability cycle? The accountability cycle starts with leadership accepting accountability. That's where it starts. The next step is then to plan your activities. That happens in part of the APP process up front when you do your budget, you plan what you're going to spend your money on and how you're going to report on it. The second step then is to implement those activities. It's the do part. In this do part, the internal control environment is extremely important. So if we then talk about internal controls, we talk about having adequate financial and performance management systems in place, the right people in the right positions, adequately skilled people, they know what they're supposed to do and they're supervised on a daily basis. So if there's any finding in the audit report, it's generally located in this area. To say, where did it go wrong? There's an internal control failure somewhere. When we look at the negative outcomes in the portfolio, it's important that we can, we pause here and reflect on this to say, if recons are not done daily, if action plans are not implemented, if irregular expenditure keeps on occurring year after year, and poor record keeping is not addressed, it's indicative of internal control failures that's happening in the portfolio. According to our assessment, SABC, MDDA, and the Firm and Publication Board definitely have serious issues around control failures. Monitoring is the next step. This is where your assurance providers is critically important. Now, assurance providers start with senior management. Is there senior management? Now, in an environment where there's a high level of vacancies, this control fails. Where there's no CEO, where there's no board, this is where accountability then fails. Because you need your assurance providers to give assurance into the environment that the internal control environment is strong and that the money is spent for the intended purposes. Another assurance provider that's important, that plays an important part in this space is the audit committees. Because again, they are providing assurance about what's happening in the environment. In the case of SABC, a number of environmental matters happened in this space. If you think about the board being dysfunctional, no audit committee, high vacancies of senior management, lack of monitoring and control, even before we can get to consequences, this is the space where it fails. Because how do you hold people accountable that were in acting positions and where the internal control environment is so weak that you don't know where the control failed. It's only then when we can tick these boxes and we can say that there is a strong internal control environment, monitoring happens as it should happen, consequences is implemented when you need to, it then get to an improved audit outcome. Once you have an improved audit outcome, it then contributes to a better life for citizens. So this accountability cycle is extremely important. So whenever we go through the presentation, we're going to unpack this more and more for the portfolio. It's important to reflect back on where did the control fail in the accountability cycle. If we then look at the portfolio outcomes check, let me first talk about the three areas that we look at. For us to be able to report, we look at three areas. We look at the financial management, we report on the compliance matters, and we also look at the performance information. So how well have you reported against your targets? Chairperson, I think it's also important for me to reflect here that you can get a clean audit and not achieve the majority of your targets, or not achieve even none of your targets, as long as you are transparent, you're honest, and you're reporting accurately in your APP. So when we then reflect on our audits, we reflect on all three areas. The audit opinions, just very shortly, starts with a clean audit, unqualified with no other matters. The yellow is qualified, but there's either matters on compliance or performance information, or both. Qualifications is where we can locate the areas where the financial statements were not a fair reflection. An adverse audit opinion is where there's a disagreement that is pervasive, and then a disclaimer opinion is where there's no information. So we are not in a position to determine whether the financial statements are right or wrong. If we then look at the audit outcomes for this year, we are reflecting the progress over 4 years. So next year we will add the second year, or the fifth year. When you reflect over the 4 years, you can see the improvement in making sure that there's sustainability around the clean audits. And we need to commend those departments and entities that managed to stay there. GCIS has been in that space for the fourth consecutive year that we reflect on in this presentation. The Department of Communication has been there for 2 years, and Brand SA as well. You will note that we indicate that there's a regression in audit outcomes. That regression is mainly vested in the SABC. The committee staff has also indicated that ICASA, MDDA, and Firm and Publication Board have been unqualified for a number of years. That is also not a good space to be in. Although we commend the financial ability to be unqualified, so you've actually fairly recorded your financial matters, the hurdles in terms of either compliance or information needs to be addressed. The SABC this year received an adverse audit opinion. The adverse audit opinion is triggered now, as I explained, it's where there's a disagreement. The financial statements were compiled on the basis that they are a going concern. In our assessment, the cash flow constraints that they have is so severe that we are not in a position to say that they will be trading for the foreseeable future, as they are not in a position to pay their creditors as they become due. What aggravated the situation at the SABC in terms of our opinion is that when we audited the cash flow and how much the creditors were, we realized that we are not in a position to determine that what do they actually owe to creditors, because the invoices were not captured daily. It was not captured and monitored. So the internal control around payments or purchasing and not paying, but loading the invoices on the system, failed. So by the time we reported, we had a qualification on accruals as well, to say we don't know whether all the accruals have actually been recorded in the financial statements. I'm going to unpack the adverse audit opinion at the SABC a bit more later. When you reflect on the compliance matters, again, a good indication that progress has been made for the last 3 years. This year, other than the two departments and Brand SA, the Firm and Publication Board had no non-compliance findings. They had findings last year, they managed to deal with that. Which means that for the Firm and Publication Board, they only have performance matters that they need to resolve. The rest, they're doing well. So if we then look at the performance matters, there you will note the regression. Where both the Firm and Publication Board and NDDA regressed in terms of the usefulness of indicators. Again, the question that we have to ask here is, was there stable leadership in those entities? Because leadership is influencing this process significantly. The challenges we have around reliability of information and whether the information that's actually being presented in the annual report is fair and accurate is mainly to do with lack of documentation, making sure that there's adequate systems to collate information and that the entities, especially ICASA and SABC, is actually in a position to give you a true reflection of their performance. So when the committee then review the performance, I think it's important to take note of the slide that Kulani will share with us around our findings on certain indicators that we were not able to get all the information to satisfy ourselves that what they were reported was in factually accurate and valid. Regarding the internal control environment, I spoke about it. What I would like to highlight here on this slide that is that only Brand SA have green in all the areas. That is significant. That's what where we need to go. Now, the other two entities, DOC and GCIS, have yellow areas. This doesn't mean that they don't have a clean audit. It just means that there's areas where leadership needs to pay attention to, because if not addressed, it might impact on future outcomes. So I would really like the DGs and specifically the DGs for those two departments to go back to their management letters and identify those areas of internal control where the auditors have made notes in your management report, pick it up and make sure that we address those. Chairperson, if we reflect on the assurance providers, in a situation at SABC that we experience currently at SABC where there's leadership instability, where there's key vacancies at senior levels, it's then no surprise to say there was no assurance provided by senior management. There was a lack of assurance provided by the accounting authority for the year under review, taking into account that the interim board was only appointed post-year end. And then also the audit committee was dysfunctional for the year, which is creating an environment where even before we can talk about consequences, the internal control environment is weak and remains weak. Chair, I think at this stage it's important for me to just reflect. When you look at what's happening currently at the SABC and the internal control matters that's been depicted on the board, in 2013, I drew the letter last night that I wrote to the previous Minister of Communications, Mr. Yunus Karim, in September 2013. And The only matter that was addressed in this letter is the issue around skills, because the SABC has made a concerted effort to appoint skilled people. The challenge is now to utilize those individuals to strengthen the internal control environment. I think that's the important one. But, Chair, before we continue, I think I just want to highlight a few matters that I've reported to the Minister at that stage. To say the board is dysfunctional. Inadequate governance structures, as the Audit Committee is not in place and it's not playing an oversight role. The compliance monitoring from both the board and the Audit Committee is weak. High number of non-compliance findings were noted. Unusually high number of vacancies in key positions. The executive leadership did not play an adequate oversight role to ensure that previous audit qualifications are addressed. And also that inadequate business processes and policies and monitoring thereof exist. It's exactly the same situation as we're sitting in currently. Therefore, when the new board is appointed, it's very important that they go back and deal with what is been indicative of the internal control environment. There are certain key elements that must be addressed before we can move forward and get out of this situation.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to take the committee through the outcomes of programs and objectives that were selected for testing in the portfolio. I want to start off by actually commending the DOC, GCIS and BSA for not having material findings with regards to performance information. And we believe that this result or this achievement is as a result of deliberate efforts in ensuring that there's adequate processes and controls that ensure that whatever that is reported or whatever that is planned with regards to performance information is accurate and complete. Mm-hmm. And also, one thing as well that we believe is also what led to these entities getting clean, being clean in this respect, they are effectively using the interim audit of APP that we as the HESA have provided to them. So they do their processes in time to ensure that all inputs from all relevant stakeholders properly addressed in the APPs. Moving over to ICASA. ICASA had three out of the five programs where we had material findings with regards to AOPO. And when you look at the issues that were highlighted in these three programs, it's mostly around consistency between the APP, what has been planned versus what has been reported. For example, a simple and clear example would be the target or the indicator that was requested, that ICASA was requested to add with regards to the invitation to apply for the free-to-air broadcast television service. That indicator was suggested to be added after the APP was approved. However, the APP was not updated to ensure that all those indicators are in. However, if you look at the annual mm-hmm. performance report, that indicator is reported mm-hmm. on as in their report. So those are some. That is one example of inconsistencies that we picked up with regards to ICASA. Over and above that, there were some issues that we picked up around the indicators and targets not being smart. For example, there's one indicator where for the 5G forums, they just mention that they need to provide relevant inputs to these forums. However, the context of what relevant means is not clearly articulated in the APP. We believe that the issues at CAS around AOPO are not really so heavy, and we believe that there is ample opportunity for ICASA to turn these things around and without even extensive or heavy effort in this respect.
I think the root cause of why CASA is sitting in the situation is mostly because usually the finalization process of the APP takes place late in the year and a lot more closer to the deadlines that have been set for the submissions. Therefore, you pick up that quality controls that need to take place to ensure that these APPs are accurate and they are smart. They are not effectively implemented. And also, due to that, you find that also the interim review of the APP that is offered or suggested, that is offered by the HGSA, does not get to be executed due to time constraints. We believe that these issues are issues that can be addressed fairly easy, and we recommend that ICASA must make deliberate efforts in making sure that processes around performance information take place timelessly so that adequate inputs can be made to ensure that the APP is smart. And then when we move to the MDDA, we had issues around the reliability, particularly on the indicator around indirect jobs from broadcast suppliers that supply services to radio stations. There were no adequate processes to ensure or to confirm these the statistics with regards to employment offered by these suppliers. And as a result of those processes not being there, we couldn't satisfy ourselves as to the reliability of the reported achievements in the performance report. So with that, it's a matter of making sure that processes and controls within the performance management systems are adequate such that whatever data that is pulled out and reported on is accurate and complete. And then when we move to the FPP, we had material issues, especially around indicators and targets, them being smart. And these issues around indicators and targets actually resulted in us not even being able to satisfy ourselves on the reliability. So if your target is not smart, then obviously whatever that you report as achieved, we can't really say that it is reliable, if you know what I mean. But for example, with regards to these indicators and targets, we noticed that there were a number of indicators which were not correctly aligned to the targets to which they relate. For example, there is an indicator that speaks about a number of games that are reviewed, but when you look at the targets pertaining to that indicator, the target speaks about implementing automated processes. And it's difficult for you to link, actually, the indicator and the target. Another example is there was an indicator that speaks of a number of people in attendance on public dialogues. But when you look at the target for that indicator, the target speaks about implementing an online policy. So we had challenges with regards to the APP indicators being aligned to targets. And also, the other issue that we picked up was that there were a number of indicators which did not have targets and a number of targets that did not have indicators, which is quite odd because ideally each should have, there should be a pairing process. But looking at the issues that we picked up around this process, we believe that there is a number of weaknesses in the performance management system at the FPP. Predominantly, the root cause around the performance management system in the FPP is can be centered around the lack of knowledge or skills adequate to effectively discharge performance this performance management process. We recommend with regards to this that the National Treasury must intervene in terms of equipping, you know, staff at the FPP with adequate knowledge and skills to be able to effectively discharge this particular process. And then moving over to the SAPC. In the SAPC, in the end report, We did not have issues with regards to the reliability. However, it's not because of processes that the SABC had put in place. There were material corrections which were made into the performance report, which were as a result of the issues that we had picked up during the audit process. So without those material corrections, there would have still been reliability issues at the SABC. From the measurability or the smartness of the indicators and targets and strategic objectives, we felt there was a number of issues that we picked up between the relevance of indicators and targets in correlation to the strategic objectives that the SABC has put in place. For example, ideally, indicators that you put in place, they must be sufficient to ensure that you meet the overall strategic objective over that period of time that you have put that strategic objective in. And we noticed that that alignment between the indicators that have been put in place and the strategic objective, there was a disconnect or misalignment, to put it in with a lack of better words. For example, one of the strategic objectives is that the SABC must be able to meet its obligation. And the strategic plan is quite clear in terms of activities that must be implemented to meet that objective. It speaks about managing debtors, managing creditors, and managing investments. However, when you go to the annual performance plan, the only indicator related to that strategic objective is talking about maintaining cash levels. So you see now, then the SABC would be now focusing on an indicator which does not holistically address or ensure that they meet the strategic objective. So we had issues with regards to that. And another example would be one of the objectives was to increase the number of programs for people with disabilities and the number of programs with regards to sign language. But when you look at the APP and you look at the baseline and the current year targets, the APP in the prior year still speaks about speaks about three programs, and in the current year it still speaks about the three programs. So there is a misalignment because the objective speaks about increasing, you know, these programs. However, when you look at the targets that are there in the APP, there is no direct correlation. And even on the programs for sign language, actually the baseline or the prior fee or prior targets were three programs. However, in the current year, it's only two programs that were planned. So this is actually in the opposite direction of the achievement of strategic objectives. So we had a number of relevance issues around the SAPC, which made us to not be happy around the usefulness and the smartness of their targets in ensuring that strategic objectives at a high level are met. And also, over and above that, with reference to page 32, we had particular concerns with regards to the achievement of targets at the SAPC, specifically on the program around financial sustainability. None of the targets that were set by the SAPC in that program were achieved. And when you look in also the program around content and platforms, 7 out of the 12 targets that have been there, that were planned by the SAPC were only achieved. So it is a concern for us in that there are no adequate mechanisms or systems in place to monitor performance and to hold people accountable for non-performance in this area. But overall, we believe that effective use of the value-add process that the AGSA has put in place to offer a interim review for APPs before they are submitted for approval, it's one critical aspect that entities within the portfolio must start looking into, because that process can assist entities in ensuring that a number of these issues around AOPO are addressed going forward. Moving over to key projects selected as part of statutory audits, I'm not sure if members of the committee are aware. However, in the current year, there has been a number of enhancements and improvements that we've made in our methodology. We have tried to move away from just following the rand and seeing where the rand is going, but to ensure that our audits also focuses on things that actually matter. And part of these enhancements include the process of selecting key projects that are in the portfolio and making sure that these projects are reviewed as part of the process. For the portfolio of communications, we selected the DTT projects for review, which is a project that started in 2002 with a migration estimated deadline of 2018. In terms of the targets in the Department of Communications, there were three targets that the department had set for this particular project, of which all three the department has achieved, and we have confirmed that whatever achievement that they have reported is reliable, accurate, and complete. However, though these targets have been met, there were a number of concerns that we had with regards to this particular project. One being that we believe there is a lack of appropriate coordination between all relevant stakeholders in the value chain of the project. There is a sense of silos. I'm doing my part and you doing your part, but a collective sort of like effort in ensuring that the goals and objectives of the project are met, we feel there is a lack of that. And as a result, you'll see in my point below, you'll see a lot of things that some disconnects there. But the second concern that we had is that even today there's no official set deadline for the migration of the DTG project. The December 2018 date is still an estimated date, and it's difficult for oversight bodies to hold people accountable if these critical dates or matters are not pronounced or set. Because an estimate, you can't really hold people accountable for that. And we believe that there should be a drive towards ensuring that a particular deadline is pronounced in the near future. In addition to that, there has been policy uncertainties regarding the encryption of set-top boxes, encryption versus non-encryption. And also the other concern that we had was the lack of adequate public awareness initiatives to get qualifying households registered. If you look at the stats that we had as at 30 May, only 231 households who qualified were actually registered. However, if you look at the number of set-top boxes that were delivered to the post office, there was 1.7 set-top boxes delivered. 7 million. 1.7 million, yes. So 331,000 qualifying households registered and 1.7 million set-top boxes delivered at post office. This, there might be catch-up mechanisms that are currently underway, but set-top boxes by their nature are technological, and the progress made in registering people and making sure that they get this set-top boxes might have a negative impact on the set-top boxes themselves. You might find that when we reach the goal of 1.7, these set-top boxes are no longer up to date in terms of technologies and other numbers, and that numbers need to be now manufactured. So things like that need to be taken into account. In addition to that, instabilities in the financial viability of the SABC still cast doubt on its ability to meet future DTT targets. As you know, with the migration of the DTT, SABC will be able to open up more channels, and with more channels it means more content, and with more content it means more money needed to buy or to fund that content. And with the current instabilities in SABC's financial viability, there's considerable doubt in its ability to meet those targets when migration happens. In addition to that, there were material issues that we picked up on the DDT grant spending at the SABC when we looked at the total amount received over from the beginning or when the transfers were made from the department to the current year and its reconciliation to the actual expenditure. There were material issues that we raised as well there in terms of the use of that money. And that will be further explained in the qualification areas that follows. With regards to the project, we believe that the targets in the current APP are not adequate to effectively implement the DDT project, as there is no link between the APP and what is expected or needed to complete the project. For example, the switch off date, there's no target with regards to that. There's no target. There were, I think, in terms of the targets, there was about 10 awareness initiatives, and the department managed to achieve 59. However, looking at the amount of people who are registering, there should be a higher number of awareness initiatives invested in this part, as well as the registrations as well. There should be a target sitting somewhere in terms of milestones that need to be looked to with regards to registering qualifying households.
Chairperson, if we then look at the financial health in the portfolio, we've already said that SABC is the one that is commercially insolvent because it's not able to settle its liabilities as they become due. We thought to share this presentation with you. If you look at figure one, the blue line talks about the cash reserves that have been declining over the last few, 4 years, as well as the net profit line that has been declining. Now, the cash reserves at the beginning of the year was 881 million. At year end, it was only 88 million. So a decline of about 91% of the cash reserves in one financial year. On top of that, the SABC has also made significant losses of 977 million. For the last 2 years, they also made losses around 400 million rand for each financial year. Now, the situation could be worse than what we reflect here, because on top of the financial viability that we've raised at the SABC, there's also other qualifications. One of those qualifications, as I explained earlier, was the issue around accruals, to say all the expenditure has not been recorded as yet. So the expenditure line could be more, which means that your loss could be bigger. It also, we also have a qualification on assets, where assets are not depreciated when they are due, which again can have an impact on the expenditure line and then also negatively affect the profit for the loss for the entity. So the loss can potentially be bigger than what we have on the board. The next slide explains the qualifications, and I think it's important to link this too. When you reflect on the pink bar, let me go back a step and reflect on the 3 years. So SABC has been qualified for a number of years. In 2014-15, they had four qualifications, and then 15-16, only one qualification around irregular. Now, the qualification on irregular has also been covered for a number of years. Even before it was audited by the AG, they had qualifications on irregular expenditure. That qualification still exists. The SABC has not managed to deal with the qualification around irregular expenditure, which means that the amount disclosed in the financials are not accurate. It can be more, it can be less, but they have not done enough to determine exactly what is the amount of irregular expenditure at the SABC. The two new qualifications, or there's a number of new qualifications this year. The first one is the going concern. And that's the basis for the adverse audit opinion, where they've compiled their financials based on a going concern. In our view, they are not a going concern in the foreseeable future unless something happens and the situation can be turned around. Payables is the matter around the accruals that are not all recorded. Tangible assets, it's got an element of assets that were not complete. But the biggest challenge here was assets under construction. So while they're building an OB van or other construction, they already buy equipment. But those constructions take multi-year to be completed. So by the time the OB van is then put into production, some of that equipment that were already bought in the first year is outdated. And for that reason, the depreciation of those assets should already kick in once they have it and not wait for the whole construction to be completed. The deferred government grant is also a qualification this year. This is what Kulani referred to now, to say that if we look at the DTT project over the last, it's from 2002, so it's the last 15 years. We try to reconcile how much money have the SABC received for DTT project and how much have been spent. And that reconciliation reflected a number of deficiencies that the SABC is currently trying to resolve. I spoke about the irregular expenditure qualification. Then there's a qualification on expenditure. Now this qualification is, If you read the audit report, you will note it's a number of small amounts that makes a big amount. So it's small internal control failures that builds up to the extent that we then have a qualification on expenditure to say these financial statements are then materially misstated if you add all of these together. Individually, they're immaterial. Collectively, they're immaterial.
Figure, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Figure 1 focuses on findings on compliance with key legislation. Two of the seven entities had material misstatement in their submitted annual financial statement, which is SABC and ICASA. ICASA made adjustment, but unfortunately SABC could not make the adjustment because due to the reasons that have been articulated by Alice. This is due to recon, going concern, PPE, irregular expenditure, completeness of irregular expenditure that prevented them from making the adjustments that were much needed. Three of the seven entities had findings on irregular expenditure, which is SABC, ICASA, and MDDA. Two, which is SABC and ICASA, had fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There were also issues of poor management of procurement and contract of procurement and contract management, which were found under SABC, ICASA, and MDDA. This obviously will result in irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, not complying with financial statement, not complying with legislatures in order to present EFs that are free from material misstatements. We also had consequence management under SABC. SABC has not really made progress in dealing with issues of disciplinaries and investigating allegations of irregular and fixed and wasteful expenditure, which is why they're still sitting under consequence management. On the next slide, we're focusing on all six of the other entities excluding SABC. With the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred, it was incurred by ICASA. This was due to settlements that they were paying, cost containment. They paid bonuses and increments of salaries, which were really not necessarily which were in contravention of their policies, their remuneration policy, and their performance management and development policy. and they also were paid on payments to goods and services not rendered. That was also noted, and their interest that were also incurred. Under irregular expenditure, which mostly was under ICASA, and we also have some irregular expenditure under MDDA. ICASA had irregular expenditure due to mostly tax clearance issues, not requesting tax clearance certificates from foreign suppliers, and also it was also incorrect allocation and evaluation criteria that they utilized, and fair processes not followed in terms of supply chain. ICASA as well, and MDDA as well, had issues on not requesting suppliers to submit their declaration of interest together with the BBB certificates. Moving along to SABC, we felt that we should talk about SABC, aside not including it with the others, but they had a lot of irregular expenditure that was picked up together with the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which they also incurred. Most of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the current year was close to 75 million, of which 65 was due to settlement costs. This is when due to the suspensions and settling out of court or certain individuals that they got rid of. And there's also an issue of impairment of content due to the 90-10 strategy that they had. What happens is that they procure their content up front before they flight it. So now all of a sudden there's a change of the 90-10 issue. Now they have to impair those content that they bought that they are no longer using. So it also resulted in them incurring fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And also overpayment of suppliers without rendering or for payment of goods that were not received. On irregular expenditure, what should be noted is that when you're looking at the graph, you'll get the impression that they moved from 5.1 billion to 4.4 billion, which is not really actually a true reflection of them improving or dealing with their issues of irregular expenditure. It's just a question of they procured the services of a supplier to say, okay, we will be looking into all of our irregular expenditure and investigating whether this is irregular and this is not irregular. So what they did is, due to that exercise, now we had a number of, the irregular expenditure is not complete because they went and said, this is our amount versus what we used to have, what we had in our financial last year. But during our audit processes, we could pick up other irregular expenditures, and this was also due to your tax clearance certificate, their delegation of authority really not contravening the proper PFA as well. And there was also a number of deviations, procurement through deviations, not following procurement processes, which for the current year actually led to about 249 million. But it also has an impact on the prior year, because how their policies are written are contravening some of the national treasury instructions, so like cost containment and instructions. So basically what happened is now we have an incomplete irregular expenditure. So the figure of how much the irregular expenditure is still an issue. This is like Alice was saying, this goes as far back as 2013. And yet they utilize consultants for assistance of cleaning up the irregular expenditure. On the next page, which focuses on fraud and consequence management, we can confirm that disciplinary steps have not been taken against officials who incurred and permitted fruitless and wasteful expenditure for SABC. Disciplinary hearings were not held for confirmed cases. Allegations were not properly investigated, nor evidence obtained. After AIM, we've seen a trend. We've seen the interim board engaging forensic, which is under SABC, to conduct some of the investigation, as well as SIU. You can confirm that SIU is busy with the investigations of the irregular and the fruitless and necessary expenditures that have been incurred by CBC. And National Treasury as well is playing its role.
And then I will take you through the top root causes that led to the audit outcomes as we have been deliberating throughout this slide. The commitment, follow-up on commitments and proposed recommendations to the portfolio committee. In terms of the top root causes, when looking at the weaknesses that the AGSA has been communicating over the years, there has been very little progress in ensuring or in responding or putting appropriate action plans in addressing those issues. And we believe that slow responses towards putting action plans and monitoring the implementation of those action plans is one of the top root causes of why the audit outcomes are what they are now. As it has been mentioned before, also the issue of vacancies and instabilities, there's quite a number of entities within the portfolio where there's still instabilities, especially at top level management or at executive level. And the issue with these instabilities is that without vacancies at those levels being filled, a culture of corruption and a culture of dishonesty gets to go through without it not being properly guarded by those respective levels. So it is critical for organizations or for those vacancies to be filled, because the cultures within those entities are highly dependent on the message or the tone that is set at the top. So it is very critical that vacancies be filled. On the consequence management, as my colleague Jacob has mentioned in the previous slide, the other root cause is lack of consequence management. And you can see with regards to the numbers of non-compliances that resulted in irregular expenditure, that this non-compliance is taking place and it is involving quite big numbers. And this lack of consequence management, people eventually get the sense of, I can non-comply and there won't be anything be done to me, you know. And you find that even a number of these non-compliance instances would involve people who have even left the organization. So even timing with regards to this consequence management is also crucial. Looking at the commitments made by the minister, I have to put to the fore that these are commitments made by the previous minister. It's not commitments of the current minister. And you can see all of them are highlighted in red, which means that all of those commitments have not been addressed or no implementation of them has been made by the minister. And I think also it speaks to the root causes that have resulted in the outcomes in the organization, especially filling of vacancies, implementation of action plans, strengthening record keeping, and consequence management. Those are the, I would believe, the top key commitments that need to be implemented in the very short term. And then with regards to recommendations, or proposed commitments that we recommend to the portfolio committee. The first one is actually, it's all these proposed commitments is around regular and frequent monitoring of the portfolio committee in terms of what happens within the entities. I mean, we suggest that there should be regular feedback and monitoring with regards to action plans and progress with regards to poor audit outcomes, preferably quarterly. Also, feedback quarterly on key controls and weaknesses that have been identified in those key controls and what action plans have been implemented to address those issues or those weaknesses. Also, quarterly feedback on the vacancies up until this aspect stabilizes. And also feedback on controls to address irregular expenditure and implementation of preventative controls, including actions against transgressors. And lastly, feedback on actions implemented to improve the financial health, budget management control and turnaround plans and interventions, which is predominantly at the SABC and also to an extent at the MDDA as a result of the loss that they have incurred in the current year.
Chair, just shortly in conclusion, my colleagues have talked about the new audit methodology improvements. The first one I quickly want to talk about is the status of records review. This is the early warning system that we've changed from what we used to do in terms of our quarterly engagements. For SABC, we're planning an engagement before end of November to be able to assess what has happened since year end so that we can get to a sense of where are they and how are they progressing. This status of records review is not a full interim audit. It's really going to be focusing on some key matters, key projects, or key action plans that must be implemented. If I think about the SABC, we will definitely now focus on what the interventions been put in place to turn around the financial situation as well as the irregular expenditure matter. In short, our improved audit methodology will also in future focus on what matters, as I've said before. Chair, in conclusion, I think it's important for us to reflect on the corruption formula as being done by Robert Kilgart, academic person, that this is based on a lot of research, but it brings us back to the issue around accountability. Now, the M stands for monopoly, if you look at the formula. The C stands for corruption, the M stands for monopoly. Now, in government, government's got a monopoly. You get funding to do a certain service. You also have a discretion. We need leaders to have discretion. They need to decide what are they going to do by when. They need to decide which projects are they going to focus on, obviously within the policy of government. And then there also needs to be accountability. And what we've seen is that the higher the level of accountability, the less conducive the environment is for corruption. The lower the level of accountability, the higher the environment is conducive to issues of corruption. It's not our responsibility to look at areas of corruption. Those we will in future refer to other organizations as and when we identify them. But it brings home the whole message around accountability and how important it is that leaders accept the accountability that comes with the assignment. We've also seen a direct correlation between service delivery and corruption, and that's why we've got a vested interest in this, to make sure that service delivery does happen, and as I've said, in terms of the value and benefit of a Supreme Audit Institution, it is ultimately to make sure that we have a better life for our citizens. I thank you very much, Chair, for the presentation.
Thank you very much. It's 5 minutes to 12. We have those few minutes to engage because at 1 o'clock we're breaking for lunch. Can we engage on these issues? I will. I'll start with you, Honorable Kongbele. But I think there are so many issues raised here by AG that I think are critical. I think whatever audit outcome that will be favorable to ensure that there is service delivery. To me, that's one important point. clean audit without service delivery means nothing. Yes, it means something, but in terms of what is happening on the ground, it's neither here nor there. I think what is critical that you have raised, among other things, is the issue of leadership. I think this was said by a number of times by the former AG Nombembe, both at national and at local level. Problem is leadership. Leadership is not without skills, because there must be skills and all of that. And we are raising the same issues, which I think it's a problem of our own as government. I think that needs to be emphasized, Minister, all the time. And if you don't have leadership, then it's going to be very difficult. If you don't have the DGs and everybody with skills, anyway, it's going to come out as a problematic audit outcome. Consequence management is one of the things that you are raising. And I think people, if they are just doing things with no consequences, we might as well pack our bags and leave. Because people will you know, again and again repeat those problems because we are not doing anything to them. I'm just picking up points that I think, as we discuss, are critical as the committee. I won't go to the issues of internal controls because they are linked to the question, do you have leadership there? So those are some of the issues that I thought would be very important to look into. But also the proposals that you have made at the end. You had a number of proposals that the PC must do A, B, C, D. And I think the PC must take those recommendations and then implement them, look at the tracking mechanism that we were talking about when the staff was raising the issues here. Because if we don't have tracking mechanism, we take decisions, they are just there. And I think that's quite critical, members, for us to look at. But I'm happy with the recommendations that we have made. It will have to be some of the issues that we're looking into. But in detail, members, that's the presentation. We need to engage with the detail. I was just generalizing on issues that I think are critical. Honorable Kumbela.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think one up front must say is a very useful and informative engagement. And one must also acknowledge that there's crystallization of issues. The critique getting clearer and clearer, assisting us to do the work that they're supposed to assist us to do. Enabling oversight, governance, and accountability. In that direction, it's useful. But there's one area I suspect AG, unless I've missed it in this presentation, that's possible, that there is stubbornness in this direction from the AG side. Whether AG will say, it's not your responsibility. It's not the way you are supposed to do this. Provided I've missed it here. Remember, all the improvements you seem to be discussing after effect improvements. Whatever proactivity you are speaking about is how you improve your after effect responsibilities. Well, why I'm raising this issue is that if we talk of improving of departments, I suggest if you say it's not possible, then you will say that. We need to be together at a proactive stage, to be together at an active stage, to be together at a reactive stage. Because if we do this way, it can't be that we discuss it at all material terms after effect. Because an impression gets created that we always do the after effect evaluation and we believe things are going to be wonderful next year. We get shocked every year we do the after effect. Unless it is that this is not our responsibility. But it says your in your own opening, you say, is to enable us to oversight. Oversight is proactive. It's not just reactive. How are we prepared? Remember, I'm an ordinary politician. When I accepted to be here, I was not asked what qualifications do I have. But my commitment to the improvement of the lives of people have put me in. But then you are there with your technical capabilities to help me do my work proactively. And I'm saying there's stubbornness there. Unless I've missed it in your presentation. Again, the other key word is you've got your pie chart that articulates phases of, that articulates accountability as key. Your plan, your do, your what? Your plan, your do, your check, and your act. And you've nicely couched it in a pie chart. Why am I crying for productivity? It's important that we interact with you when these plans are tabled. And you say to us, it doesn't make sense to have indicators without targets, because something like that cannot, actually under normal circumstances, that cannot exist. I'm not sure if I make my point. Under normal circumstances, it doesn't make sense to have indicators without targets, because they have no purpose. Now the question that one must ask, how does one get the boldness to put indicators when there is no target? Am I correct? It means you can just put whatever you want to put, no matter how meaningless it is. Because when you are indicating, it's because you know the target, and then you are saying to yourself, what will show if I'm moving towards that target? Now when there is an indicator without a target, it means it's in the park, it's in the stadium we're playing. Even in the stadium there's a purpose. So that's why I'm worried about this proactivity, this proactive working with us. And then the next point is informed accountability. Because once you speak about indicators without targets, the next question that is asked, whoever puts indicators without targets, does he know in the three areas you're speaking about which area is he involved in? Because in your areas there are three that you're targeting as origin. You're saying fair presentation, you're saying compliance with legislation, and you're saying performance reports that are in line with the predetermined what you call objectives. Now the question that one must ask, if people can write non-critical things like this, the question is, do they know what they are doing? Now, if they don't know what they are doing, why do we expect after the end of the year that they will produce results in implementing something they do not know? Now, that question of informed accountability, not only informed and also mutually understood, if that vocabulary is correct. In other words, between us, the committee, the department, and yourself, a common understanding of that language, so that when we come at the end of the year to interact with one another, our expectations are common. So this is where the problem is. To me, under normal circumstances, indicators without target, it must be an embarrassment in any serious-minded protocol. Like what the HS says, he says, tracking system, if you read the content present. I mean, how many years were in government now? How sensible it is that we can speak about the absence of a tracking system to check whether the NDP goals it must be an alarm. I'm not sure if you've got alarm systems as AG, provided they were proactive. Now, why I'm raising all these things is that if you check your selected areas, there's no improvement in any one of those which you have selected. There's stagnation, there's reversal, there's a, which is the third one? There's stagnation and reversal, and I'm forgetting the third one. Okay. Stagnation and reversal, but there is no improvement. But what is interesting, your oversight in the DOC has no material findings. I'm very careful because I don't know your work. It has no material findings. Yet the entities, there are entities which have got serious material findings. SABC is worse, your MTDA and others. But your oversight in under DOC has got no what to call material findings. To me, my worry is, what is there no material findings on the oversight area in the DOC? What is it that we're checking? I'll tell you why I want to share with the chair when he says a clean auditor doesn't lead to improvement of service delivery. Because oversight unit in DOC, if you take into account that 93% of their money goes to what to call to entities, the importance of the oversight unit becomes very, very critical in ensuring that those entities do perform. But if you link the state of the entities that are on the wrong side and the oversight unit that has got no material what to call findings, again, the concern by the chair finds location, maybe because we don't know how you do your work. And the other issue is this generally the performance information. This is very stressful. I've read a number of your documents. Basically, I know we raised even with the new minister this issue. There is this phenomenon, as AG must assist on this. When you say to people, you're not supposed to write this thing like this, they said, no, that is our own way of doing it. And in the accountability modern science, there's nothing like that. The point I'm making is that if you are to achieve a particular target, the change that must happen towards realizing that target must be something that all of us are able to understand, irrespective of whatever method you use. That's why I get disappointed when you speak to departments, they tell you, no, this is our own method. But when you say, okay, demonstrate the change towards your target. So it forces that we must agree on the commonality of protocol of language. My last point is that accruals. I said, remember, you speak about accruals. If there's one thing that has always been frustrating me in your accounting language, is the loose, you will correct me, the loose of the word, loose use of the word accrual. I thought you can accrue liabilities. You will correct me. You can accrue assets, if that is possible. I want us to speak, the general tendency is also saying, when you talk accrual, you're meaning expenses. And I found it to be placed in a very strange use of language. If you can, when you say accruals, what are you referring to? And generally, in accrual accounting, because I think you're using accrual accounting, what does the word accrual generally mean? Does it only apply on expenses? Does it not apply on the asset side and so on? If so, is it correct to refer only to expenses as accruals? Because I don't know what you're referring to. You will explain that. Yes.
Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, mine is just a clarification question on the report of the AG, page 20 in particular. The report of the AG indicates impairment of contents of 3 million rands. Now, my understanding of an impairment, it's an amount that accumulates, be it annually or otherwise. So I want to check whether this impairment of contents is only that 3 million rands. It's not going to accumulate, probably when we come back here, it will be increased to whatever millions which are above the amount that you have reported today. So is that a simple clarification question? Thank you, Chair.
Any other hands? Okay. AJ?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member, for the comments made and the questions asked. To start with the enabling oversight, you made a comment around how can the AG be more proactive and in assisting the portfolio committee. There's two areas that I think it's very critical for us to assist in. And you touched on the one. The first one is the review of the APPs before it comes to this committee. Now, that is a process we started about 2-3 years already. And there's a number of entities and departments that's taken us up on this offer. All right. There's no legislation that says we must do it. All right. So it's a proactive intervention by us to say, let's look at your targets before it comes to the committee. Now, in the portfolio, the entities that are critical is ICASA, SABC, and Firma Publication Board. And none of them were able to give us their APPs in time. The departments were perfect. They gave it to us early. We could review it, give them feedback. They make amendments even before it comes here. So in those cases, we do not come in here to say A, B, and C was wrong, but they've now fixed it. We can give you assurance to say they fixed it. It's right now. But the entities are the culprits where they are not taking us up on that offer. When we, ACBC was consistently being late with the APP, so by the time it comes to Parliament, we can't then play a role. So it's very important that they take us up on that offer because we want to assist them, especially around the usefulness of targets. Because I do believe that it is very disempowering to the portfolio committee to approve a strategic plan without having had that insight to say where's the correlation. Then also the other area is then on the status of records review where, as I said, we're going to go into SABC before end of November, and early in the new year we will be able to give you feedback around what is happening. It's not an audit, it's not an interim audit, but it gives management, the minister, as well as portfolio, a good sense of the progress that has been made. You also mentioned, Chair, the comment about a common understanding of the language. And I acknowledge that the language you use around the performance information is difficult. It's difficult to understand always what are we referring to. And maybe through you, Honourable Chair, we can arrange for a session where we can engage and use some of these targets as case studies, maybe even before we do the APP next year, early in the new year, we can really invest time to do this before you approve your annual performance plan. Before I go to the accrual, maybe I'll just hand over to Kulani if you've got to add to the APP process.
I think also just to add a little bit on the informed accountability, it is critical that when people perform jobs or tasks that have been allocated to them in their roles, they are adequately informed as to what is expected to them, and they are adequately equipped from a skill point of view. And I think with regards to AOPO, it's a very special kind of an environment because it's not a subject matter that is an international the recognized subject matter, like your accounting principles, for example. It's our own government-specific subject matter, if I can put it that way. And as a result, we believe that maybe if we are also deliberate in assisting with informing and assisting with regards to equipping, you know, people on the ground with regards to the understanding of the subject matter, maybe it will aid in them better, you know, executing their functions in this particular process. We have tried other mechanisms of being proactive, especially with performance information, where, for example, at ICASA we have held workshops with the ICASA management team, the internal audit team, to assist them in better understanding the subject matter. We believe, obviously, over time, as people get used to the process, you know, there will be some change. We are still committed to implementing those initiatives where they are needed, and I guess in aspects of the MTDA and in the aspect of Films and Publications Board, apart from the National Treasury intervening, we also as the AGSA can maybe see how we can assist in maybe workshopping those individuals just on the understanding of performance information. And exactly, because if you look at performance information, we are not, how we audit it, we are not, it's not special procedures that we are executing in auditing performance information. It's a simple process of looking what the regulations, performance management regulations are saying, indicators and targets must be written as, and then just checking whether those particular criteria are embedded in the write-up of the indicators and targets. And I believe there might be some value that maybe some of the entities within the portfolio can get from this process. But we have been proactive in trying to inform, you know, entities insofar as possible. And then maybe just to speak on the impairment. Okay.
Thank you very much, Kulani. Chair, there was also a question around the clarification of the use of accrual. Apologies if I was too technical in my explanation. In the context that we used it today, it is where expenditure has been incurred, so you committed to buy stuff, but you haven't paid yet. So it's those expenditure that you've got a commitment to pay, but at year end, it hasn't been paid yet. And because we're on the accrual system, it then means that I must bring that into the books. So I bring it into the books as expenditure, and I create a liability for it. So it's accrual in its sense is a liability. So you must not pay that money. So you bought a car, let me use an example of a car, you bought a car, but by year end you received the car, but you haven't paid it yet. That will be accrual because you pay it just after year end.
Are you done?
Yes, I'm done. Can I, with that explanation,
oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
No, I think it's important. I just want to put it this way so that you can educate. If I own a business, then that which accrues to me not having not been paid yet, what do you call it from the asset side? You understand the reason why I am asking this question. Because the danger of saying accrual is only accrued what you call expenses, it appears like that would be incorrect. So if assets accrue to me because before they are actualized into my account, so what do you call them?
Through you, Chair. That is a different element of accrual. We use the same word, but it in this case, it accrues to you. So in this case, it would be an asset where say, for instance, you are receiving a salary, but by year end you haven't been paid, so it's a salary that accrues to you. That's when you look at it from an individual perspective. In the organization, for the organization that hasn't paid yet at year end, that becomes the liability. So for you it's an asset because you haven't received it yet, but for the organization that needs to pay, it's a liability. They must still pay you.
So there's an accrual which is not an expense. And if you use the word generally, you don't know whether you're referring to expense or to the asset.
In the context of the qualification, maybe I must stick to the context of the qualification. In the context of the qualification, it is expenditure that was incurred but not paid yet. Okay? So the organization must still pay that. Alright, that's that up. Chair, then on the Honourable Deputy Minister's question around the impairment of content. Impairment does accrue, but this is the yearly amount.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the amount for this year that then gets added to what was there at the beginning of the year. So it does accrue, but this is the yearly amount. In terms of the what Jacob also explained is content was bought, but because it wasn't flighted, it now impaired. And in this case, it was as a direct result of a policy decision. So it was fruitless. In normal cases, impairment happens as a cause of business and it becomes an expense. In this case, it was just that this expense was fruitless. I hope I clarified that.
If I may, Chair. Through you, Chair. So you mean it accumulates? Because that's what I wanted to understand, that it accumulates or not. It's not going to end on 3 million, which is reported here today.
Just maybe to add, by maybe just give a brief understanding. Some of the contracts with regards to content, the production houses, these contracts are for a particular period, and certain of these episodes must be flighted within a particular time frame. So if the SABC does not flight those particular programs or episodes in that time frame, automatically they forego the benefit towards that content. So as a result, it becomes fruitless. So from an accumulation point of view, if this contract is a contract that spans over a period of years, there may be elements where these contracts in the following year, there might be instances where there's additional episodes that are not flighted, and as a result, there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure because they did not use that content, and they cannot use it in another different period because those particular type of contents are locked into this particular period for a particular time frame.
Yes, no, Chair, I'm covered because that's my understanding of the impairment. It happened in one other entity and then that was the case. So I wanted to check if the case is the same on this one.
One question from Honorable Kumubele that is not answered. Can you repeat? Because I'll just tell you the irony from my ordinary eyes, not your professional eye. My ordinary eye is that I see DOC having no material findings on the entity oversight. Yet the work of the entity oversight, if it's done well, must find expression in the state of the SOCs, state-owned enterprises. And there's an SABC in problem, MDDA in problem, or whatever and so on. And then you've got the oversight unit that has got no material or to call. Finally, and please forgive me, I'm looking at it from my unprofessional eyes, because it's like, not to, just on a light light, you know, there's a, without messing up this whole thing, there's a club in South Africa which was given an award of the most balanced team of the year without a cup. It has never won a cup that year, but it got an award of being the most balanced team of the year.
So those that won the cup did not win that plant. Now you ask, what is the purpose of the balance? Now, in other words, the entity oversight is its performance must find expression in the performance of the state. Now, this irony is from my unprofessional eye, but I want it to be clarified. Because our view, we've spoken as a portfolio committee about it, it doesn't seem to be doing its work. That oversight, we just would do material finding. We've asked for its plans and a number of other things. It doesn't seem to be doing its work, and even the kind of skills that are deployed there don't seem to be skills that are supposed to be doing that. But there's a green thing that says no material finding. So that's an unprofessional eye.
I think maybe to just maybe in some instances oversight.
Who said you must report?
Oh, so sorry. Apologies. Fine. Apologies.
Go ahead, you can respond.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I must be honest, I haven't done this exercise to exactly match the DOC oversight performance to what's in the entities as we speak now. I think it's a very valuable comment to make to say, let's go back and check what's the level of performance that were actually recorded in the department's APP, and then determine how effective that is. I'm going to be honest to say I haven't done that exercise in preparation for today. Thank you, Chair.
I think those are the questions, members. If we have none over and above the two questions. Thank you very much. Thanks, AG. You can remain, or you may leave if you're rushing somewhere. But it should be at your advantage to sit and listen to what DOC is going to say. We have only 30 minutes before 1 o'clock. There are two reports that we are going to get, DOC and GCIS. Let's have a bite until 1 o'clock, because we can't break now. We don't have lunch. I hope, members, you do have the analysis from our researchers.
You must be tired. You're up and down.
Honourable Minister, I will then allow you to take us through. I think the first department here. First department here is GCIS, eh? Okay. It's the first department. Where is it?
Where are you hiding?
You have a lot there.
I'm doing it.
Hello. Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
This is not a break.
Yeah.
It's just to allow the department to get ready. It's not a break.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Or you have
no,
a suggestion?
No, not that I'm wanting us to speak to the minister. Just on what has been raised by the AG. On the various entities, and you know, we all read from, and I was looking at hearing, listening to what Honourable Bungbeda was saying, that we all read from different management books, or business books, business school books. Some are West University, some are Harvard, some are LSE, some use Polk as their framework for accountability, and others use what the AG is using. But at the end of the day, whether people are, and that's notwithstanding the fact that the non-filling of vacancies in departments really does create instability, that does not mean that people who are appointed to act in positions do not possess the full delegated authority to that post, including the accountability that comes with the delegated authority to those posts. And I wouldn't want us leaving here with the impression that people who act are inherently reckless and corrupt, because that would be a wrong note to leave on. They have as much responsibility and accountability as full-time employees. But just going to the issue that was raised on the lack of documentation, supporting documentation from the SAPC, it's a thing that I think all of us know that we've decried this over time. And one of the things that I have put in place, notwithstanding the call that I am interfering, but just to assist the SAPC, is to get state-owned entities to assist with document management as per legislation. Because if the AG goes in there and the documents are not there, it means, not only does it mean we're reckless, but it means we're violating piece of legislation that enjoin all entities to document, to manage their documents effectively. Same goes with quality assurance, which we have seen in the SAPC being problematic. The delegations of authority, all of us need to stick to that and ensure that we're accountable on what has been delegated. And as I said earlier on, it goes for those that are acting and for those that are full-time incumbents to the position. And the one thing that I have decried over time, because I have also looked at different SOEs, and some of the things that happen in these SOEs that create problems, one of them is the fact that at times boards tend to assume the role of executive management and they become operational. So I think as you do your work and I assist where I can, or the other way around, we must really ensure that boards do not assume the responsibilities of the CEO, the COO, and the CFO in all organizations. In the same way that you would expect that the minister will not be responsible or will not take part in the operations of the entity, the same goes with the board, not just of the SAPC, of any entity, because they have responsibilities quite distinct to those of the executive management of the entity. That's all that I just wanted to raise in response to the issues that have been raised by the AG.
Members, do we have the presentation? Do we have the presentation, members?
Yes.
What are you doing? What alarm? Huh? No, no, it's just so that I don't want us to be disturbed when we start the meeting. If we can have documents and be clear what documents we have, so that we don't get questions as to which one are we dealing with. That is why I'm checking if we have documents. Do we have the presentation from DOC? Where is it? Where is the presentation? There is no presentation here. You gave me this morning why? Okay. Are you ready, Minister?
Yes, Chairperson, I am.
We'll round up to 1:01.
Just for my part, Chairperson, and then I'll give over to Gunisile, who is the acting DG, to go through the presentation as quickly as she can, because a lot of the issues really have been raised by the Auditor General, including the Portfolio Committee research sources. The DOC had a total of 29 targets, and it only achieved, well, it achieved 27, with 7 not achieved. And I will just go through what has not been achieved so that we understand where we are and we give an account of what we will be doing to ensure that the risk of non-achievement of this is mitigated. The first one was in Program 2, which is the Audiovisual Act, and I see that the Portfolio Committee also raised the matter as well. And we do say that a draft white paper on audiovisual and digital content policy for South Africa was to have been approved in that financial year. The policy was presented to Cabinet for approval and publishing. However, the Cabinet recommended that we go for further consultation with other ministries. That has been done, and we'll be taking the Cabinet memo to the next Cabinet for further discussion and also approval to publish. The second one, still on Program 2, ICASA Amendment Act implemented. ICASA Amendment Act signed into Act, that was the target. But what we say here in explaining this is that the Integrated ICT White Paper calls for a split between the infrastructure and content regulators, and that Cabinet is calling for the two bills to address the economic and content regulators. This will have an impact on ICASA in its current form, as a need, a split will have to happen here. And this will be addressed under the recently published ICT Commission Bill, and content regulator will be addressed through the white paper process by publishing a bill establishing the content regulator. But we'll be able to share with the Portfolio Committee the impact, whether good or bad, of this move. The third one is on Program 2 as well, Community Broadcasting Support Strategy and developed and implemented. That the Community Broadcasting Support Strategy is approved by Cabinet. And where we are now is that due to the internal reprioritization, we had consultations were held in February 2017, and it was agreed that we would have finalized this by 2017-2018 financial year. The fourth one is the payment of invoices within 30 days. The target was 100%. We achieved 98.7%. Still in Program 2, Media Development and Diversity Management Mandate amended, Green Paper on MDDA published. We say that the finalization of the MDDA Green Paper is dependent on the draft white paper on audiovisual and digital content policy for South Africa. The MDDA is finalizing impact study with its inception to advance development and diversity, with its intention, sorry, to advance development and diversity in the sector, and that the white paper on audiovisual is due to be submitted to Cabinet, as I said earlier on. On Program 4, that is the sixth indicator, number of oversight reports submitted to executive authority, the 5 annual report and 20 quarterly entity oversight reports submitted to executive authority, and what we say are the reasons for this failure to achieve the target is that the quarter 2 and quarter 3 entity oversight reports were not approved by the executive authority due to an introduction of a new approval process of discussing performance reports in bilateral meetings. And a schedule of bilateral meetings between the executive authority and the boards of SOEs has been developed and reports are discussed and approved in these sessions. So this is the intervention that we're putting in place. And then on the seventh one, the number of shareholder, that's also from Program 4, the number of shareholder compacts and accountability instruments signed, 1 shareholder compact and 4 accountability instruments signed was the target that was supposed to have reached. And the reasons is that ICASA performance agreements were prepared but not signed due to prolonged discussions with councillors. And for the 2017-18 accountability instruments, we will develop and will sign after consultation with the executive authority. The department will finalize the accountability instruments within the first quarter of 2017-2018 financial year. But just for ease of comfort, Chairperson, on the vacancies, we have the Director General post, and we're in the process of headhunting because we've advertised, I think, twice or thrice, and in some instance, I think in the first instance, we didn't get adequate number of CVs or applicants, and we have decided to go the headhunting route. But all of that is above board. The other is on entity oversight, the Deputy Director General. Shortlisting process was concluded, awaiting an interview date. And then on communications policy research and development, also Deputy Director General, the shortlisting process has been concluded, and again, we await the interview date. But Chairperson, we hope that all of these positions will be filled by the 31st of November. But we have scheduled interviews, and we will be able to get back to you to give you further information on where we are as we progress. Then there are deputy director and admin officers, which I don't think will be of huge interest. But again, the vacancies will be filled by the 1st of November in both of them. That's internal audit, legal services, asset and supply chain management. So that is on communication, so I'll then let Qinisile to take you through the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members. I have, I think, a very easy task of reporting the excellent work that has been done by the DOC. I only joined in April, so credit to the team and the former DGs who were running the department for that. Ladies. Yes, Chairperson. I'll skip some of the slides because I think there is a technicality here. I'm sorry about that. Well, as I said, proud to present this annual report to the Honourable House. Just to go back to the mandate of the DOC, I'm not going to go through it, but I think it's important to always reflect on the role that the department tries to play within the broader national development plan in terms of making sure that our citizens have access and also in nation building and social cohesion. Then going to the strategic goals really is around ensuring that we comply with good governance practices as a department and that we capacitate or provide support to the entities to deliver on their own mandates as well. We aim to develop responsive communications policy and create an environment, regulatory environment for broadcasting, spectrum management, and the rest of that. We aim through Brand SA to improve our country branding, and then through MDDA and other entities as well to transform the sector. Overall performance, as has been reported by the minister, we had 29 targets achieved, 22, and 7 targets were not achieved. The overall departmental achievement is 76%. There are 3 projects where we have overachieved. I'll skip to them, which is 70% in terms of our target was 70% of requisitions converted to orders within 48 hours. We've managed to do 98% of that, which is exceeded by 28%. The number of digital broadcasting awareness campaign, I think the AG spoke to this. We were supposed to only have 10 in the year, and we've managed to do 59. The CFO always says, makes a joke to say it's proof that where there is no money, there is capacity to innovate. Because of limited resources, we had to leverage on other platforms and other events to be able to achieve and exceed the goal. The third one is stakeholder engagements, where we had planned to do 10, we've done 11 of them. Program 1, Chairperson, just highlights, we continue to be supported by GCIS for IT, internal audit, and supply chain, although now we have our supply chain management person, so we are doing the supply chain ourselves. The department has 90 funded posts, of which 76 are filled. As Minister indicated, some are in the process of being filled. Others have been filled. We are just waiting for people to resume the work. So we are going to see that number going down. In terms of employment equity, we have 10 females and 13 males, which is 42% and 58% respectively. And then people with disabilities constitute 2.6%. We have an HR plan in place. We have a well-placed skills plan in place, and as well as an employment equity development plan, which all have been approved and we are currently implementing. Internal audit projects were conducted, and the reports were submitted to the audit and risk committees. Reports were compiled on contracts, MOUs, legal instruments, and litigations that the department managed during the period. Financial statements were complied and submitted on time in line with PFMA. 99% of invoices were paid within 30 days, and as I indicated, that the 96% of requisitions were converted to orders within 48 hours. We submitted our performance reports to National Treasury, DPME, within the prescribed legislation timeframes. Our APP as well was submitted or tabled in Parliament and DPME. Our Outcome 14 implementation plan, which is headed by Department of Arts and Culture, we have complied. We have developed a service delivery improvement plan, and as well as a service delivery charter, which has been approved by the executive authority. Now, coming to the program 2, which is really around communications policy research and development, as Minister has indicated, most of the targets in that branch essentially were not achieved, and that is linked to the cabinet processes as well as the other regulatory processes that are happening at DTPS. So if you'll allow me, Chairperson, I'm not going to repeat that. Then in terms of the communication media support strategy, I need to indicate that that was done a research report was on communication media was compiled. And then in terms of the number of community radio stations that were provided with broadcasting infrastructure, that as well was achieved. In summary, there is a list here of some of the radio stations that were provided with the infrastructure. It's Mohodi FM, Vembe FM, Mukhale FM, MLO FM, and Elgin FM in the Western Cape. It's here. Then in terms of the draft white paper on audiovisual and digital content, as I said, Minister has indicated to this, we are going back to Cabinet, hopefully within this financial year still, for a Cabinet to approve. And then in terms of the necessary process in finalizing the policy, I think we've worked with DPME. We have a socio-economic impact analysis on the white paper. So as soon as we go back to Cabinet, we really are hoping that they'll give us a green light to go ahead. Then in terms of, I'm going to skip this because it's still speaking to the white paper. Going to program three, which is industry and capacity development. The one achievement was around the work that was done on broadcasting digital migration in Northern Cape in the SKA area, where we were able to switch off in the core SKA area. In this instance, we have received recently from Minister of Science and Technology a letter of acknowledgement of the work that the department has done, because it will now enable the DST to continue with the work without any interference in terms of the telescope. Then I spoke already on the achievements around the public awareness campaigns for the DTT, where in case where we were supposed to achieve to do 10, we've managed to do 69. I need to indicate here also that in the middle of that financial year, National Treasury gave the department additional money for that project to be done. Another achievement is the number of, we are to develop reports that are showing the number of consumers who have access to digital broadcasting. These reports have been compiled by the department. The other one is on the international communications programs that are implemented. This is our international relations work as well, which is in terms of implementing two communications programs and the regional content hub. This was implemented and the progress reports were compiled and submitted. Then the number of stakeholder engagements that were coordinated. This also is partly to do with the international work where the department participates in bilateral engagement. Over and above the 10 that were planned, there was an additional on the Joint Commission of Cooperation with Zambia. On strategic multilateral partnerships, excuse me about that. Strategic multilateral partnerships that were coordinated. We coordinated South Africa's participation in WIPO and in the bilateral engagements with China and Russia. Here with Russia, we are negotiating an agreement. With China, we negotiated an agreement which has subsequently been signed this year. In terms of a number of reports on the South African Broadcast Production Advisory Body, two reports of the work of the advisory body were compiled. And then lastly, position papers. As part of our contribution to the foreign policy work of the DECO in the area of communications, we continue to advance South African positions in international forums, and in this case there were two position papers which were developed by the department for participation. As indicated, the milestones really around DTT is the door-to-door and registration campaigns and the public awareness campaigns. To date, the numbers that of as reflected by the Auditor General, as well the number of total set-top boxes that have been developed or manufactured is up to 1 million. At this point in time, we've completed the SKA area. Another project is to indicate is the collaboration with the Moses Kotane Institute, where young people, or up to 441 young people, were trained as installers through the partnership with the KZN government. There was also training of young people in partnership with some of the service providers as well. There's already been an indication that with public works in the current financial year, we are looking at training an additional 2,700 young people across the country as and when we implement the DTT project. I'm going to skip some of these slides that speak to the key milestones because I think the point has been made. And then in terms of entity oversight, I think it's 25 on entity oversight. I'm now moving to entity oversight. Sorry about that. In terms of the oversight reports to be submitted to the executive authority, 5 annual reports and 20 quarterly entity oversight reports were submitted to the executive authority during this period. I think this, to a great extent, speaks to how possibly an indicator is developed on the issue that was raised earlier on, because one of the things that I think we need to focus on, and we are trying to do that in the current financial year, is to improve the level of analysis of the reports, because it's not enough that you receive an annual report and you analyze it. It's how you use that information to advise the executive authority much better in their monitoring of the entity, and that's the area where we would need to improve. Number of alignment reports submitted to the executive authority, 10 reports, 2 per entity, on alignment of entities was submitted. Number of reports compiled on entity governance forums, 4 reports on entity governance forums coordinated as per the governance framework. In total, we had 10 entity governance forums during the year. Public entity governance oversight framework, we facilitated the implementation of the entity's governance protocols, and the 10 were developed and 10 governance forums were coordinated. Number of shareholder compact and accountability, I think the issue that Minister had raised around ICASA and how the delay in signing performance agreements with the ICASA councillors made it not possible for the department to achieve the 100% there. The milestones really is around the forums that the department continues to hold with the entities. There is the CFO's forum, there is the company secretary's forums, there is the policy and regulatory forum, and there's a forum between the DG and the CEOs, and lastly, the bilateral engagement between the minister and the board members. I'm going to then move over in terms of the key highlights of key milestones in the entities. I think part of this has been spoken into. Safe to say, Brand SA achieved 80% of their key deliverables, and they are coming within the week, so we will further expand on some of the reasons of why they didn't achieve on some of them, but it's outlined here. It's around the delays of registration of trademarks in certain countries.
they've had to reprioritize some of their communications program in order to deal with other reputational issues that were affecting a country. There are also external dependencies that are viewed to be beyond Brand SA's capacity. So, but I won't list all of them. On ICASA, it's 74.5. The main reason for non-delivery is procurement delays, unexpected project delays, some long processes in the finalization of regulation. FPB, 86% overall achievement. Some of their reasons for not delivering is that their multi-year agreement on pay progression was not accepted by parties, delayed procurement processes, and the systems that were not reviewed. Interesting to note just that they collected 94.3 million in revenue, and quickly on ICASA collected 4.55.7 million revenue in the same year. Sorry. 455.7 million. Sorry about that. MDDA, 69% achievement. Their reasons for non-delivery is around some of the projects that were deferred until the outcomes of the impact study. The vacancy rate, especially in critical positions, they were also limited application from community TV stations, and also the non-performance of beneficiary projects. SABC, I think, has been dealt with, 45%. I won't go into the details of why that has not been achieved. I think we've dealt with that. And then in terms of financial expenditure per quarter, the administration program one was at 99%. Program one was 15,491 in quarter one. Quarter two, it was 16,101, and then in quarter three, 11,968, and quarter four, 13,69. I think it's 99% spent. Program two spent, maybe if I can just go to the summary of the percentages spent, is 88%. Industry and capacity development spent 74%, and entity oversight spent 100%. I think this is in summary in terms of expenditure per quarter. Then the next slide is showing the budget allocation per program versus expenditure. I think it's just a reflection of the same figures that have been presented. So I'll move over to the next slide. Just to reflect expenditure per quarter per economic classification on compensation of employees, overall total spent was 96%, which is 65,482,000. And then on goods and services, it was 75%, which is 34,385,000. And then on transfer payments, it's 1.232, which is 100%, and then machinery and equipment as well. The next slide reflects the same in image form, the budget allocation per classification versus expenditure. I'll move over, Chairperson, to annual performance per program, and which really is around something, I think it's been reflected on in terms of the levels of expenditure. For program 1, 99, program 2, 88, program 3, 74, and then entity oversight is 100%. I'm going to skip the slide and move to the audit opinion. I think the AG has spoken to the fact that the department has received a clean audit with some matters that have to be addressed by the department. In terms of the CFO, the department is already dealing. We've got a plan in terms of what we need to do to address the issues raised by the AG, and in our meetings or at Manco, we are reviewing that on a monthly basis. So the CFO is around accruals and commitments, and then the issue of the payment within 30 days, and we had an incident of one supplier who was one of the directors was in service to government, which was not declared under statement of receivables events after reporting dates relating to contingent liabilities not disclosed, and the maintenance of SLAs in the IT environment where controls were not renewed. Another matter which was raised is around the chief director entity oversight, the key activities not performed due to lack of oversight and governance structures at state-owned entities, and transfer of funds and lack of oversight role by the department. The other matters that have to be addressed by the Director of Human Resource is monitoring of system users. Chief Director of Human Resources, it's actually Director of Human Resources, it's Chief Director Corporate Services, sorry about that. It's Chief Directorate Corporate Services under Human Resources, monitoring of system users and system controller activities and access rights on PESAL, and then the inadequate password configurations in the department. Chairperson, I think that's the end of the presentation, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we have another presentation from Josiah? Or, because we'll break at 1:30 for lunch. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the GCIS, there were only two targets that were not achieved. And you must, I think we must also remember that when I say not achieved, I'm also speaking to those that were partially achieved. Because we mustn't live with the impression that it is total non-achievement. For instance, just to give an example, on the payment of invoices, the target was 100%. And 98.69% was reached. So it's just that I don't want us to act as though we've fully achieved when we have not fully achieved. But in this case, there were only two. On program two, the performance indicator on this one was the number of reports on social media accounts, performance as per weekly content. As of now, we are improving on this one, and the reports are coming in timely, but I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done, although they have not helped me out on this one. And on the same content processing and dissemination, the number of graphic designs, the target was that 500 graphic designs would be completed, and we only received 472 requests for graphic designs from departments. And the variance was due to less requests from departments. And this may be attributed to less communication budgets from departments, because as you know, when cost-cutting measures are called for, communications in departments is one of the first areas that managers look at. Then going to the vacancy reports, which I said I will update from time to time, is the first one is the DG for the GCIS. We have interviews, I think, in the first week of November already for that one. And the current content processing and dissemination Deputy Director General, the post will be re-advertised, and so will the Deputy Director General Intergovernmental Coordination and Stakeholder Management, because of the quality of applicants that came through. We hope here to also, by the first quarter of next year, to have finalized this process, actually by the 1st of January 2018. And then on media engagement, the chief director, interviews were held on the 1st of September, and the post will be filled on the 1st of November. The other one is chief director for social sector, governance and administration clusters.
The interviews were held on the 8th of September and the post will be filled on the 1st of November. Products and Platforms Chief Director, selection process has been finalized, submission with Minister for approval. And again, this will also be, the person will start on the 1st of November. And then on Finance, the Chief Financial Officer, the post has been re-advertised because of the quality of applicants that came through. And the post will also be filled by the 1st of January, in the January 2018. The other vacancies are at director level and at lower levels, and I will not bore you with that information, but I will package it for your eyes. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Minister. Good afternoon to the honourable members. I think I'm just going to introduce the presentation of our annual report, just following from the Minister, but I think the various program directors, DDGs, will also be unpacking. I think the Minister has indicated that we've achieved 96% of our targets. And importantly also, Chair, we would like to also indicate that we achieved 98.7% of our expenditure. Mm-hmm. And I think by students' standards, it's a distinction. but I think I would want to give credit, Chairperson, to the Auditor General. I think if some of us who've been in GCIS for quite a while will remember that we were somewhere at some point in the purples and hovering in the sweet pink, but I think working with the Auditor General, I think we are where we are in the green. It's because of working together with the I think they became quite a team. They've assisted us in strengthening internal control of the GCIS. They've assisted us in even monitoring the payment of just service providers. It is a requirement in terms of the PFMA, but I think they have made us alive to the internal control, and as a result, I think we're almost like 99% success in paying companies within the 30 days once the service has been rendered. I thought it is important to also mention that as I commence. The strategic objectives, I'm also going to follow from my colleague Tonisile. I won't take you through all the slides, but I'd like to put meat in these 96% success targets into what exactly they amount to. I think just the high level of our strategic objective, I think we have tried to seek to achieve the cost-effective and a business focused compliant organization. We've also tried to professionalize the communication as one of our strategic. And lastly, we've also tried to strengthen the issue of information going to the South African and the proactive government information, not necessarily servicing the media only, but I think we've tried to remain focused that our main target are South Africans in the main. So I think that strategic objective, you will see itself as it pans out in some of the key successes that we have made. Chairperson, I think all of government, we've always argued that there is a serious challenge on budget, but I think we have really had to think outside of the box. The Vuk'uzenzele, as you will see the amount there, it is through the creativity of how best can we source funding, and as a result, we've been able to get departments to use Vuk'uzenzele newspaper to advertise some of their services or their vacancies, and that has enabled us in the past year to increase the production of Vuk'uzenzele to coming out twice a month as opposed to once a month, because there is no dispute in the popularity of this magazine in some of the outlying areas, and those that don't have access to the mainstream media, this is their only source of a newspaper that they have, and it's coming out in all the 11 languages, and that is one of the publications that has proved to be quite popular. Even in a Braille, we are able to do that. Also, Chairperson, I'd like to also mention one of our success intervention is the community stakeholder engagement. What we have tried to do is that it is not enough to depend on the radios or the mainstream media. We have also done a lot of face-to-face interaction with the communities, and that those figures that you are seeing there is as a result of that. The other important innovation that we did is the 242 community dialogues. I think we did realize that we do find that there is a lot of benefit in engaging with communities in a smaller scale around the communities and district communities. I think we've done a lot of that. And also we've been quite successful in community products, radio, community radio products. You will see the numbers there that they have increased. The Izimbizos, I think we've also spoken to that. The South African News Agency is also one of our success story. And also one of the areas that we would like to mention is the intervention in terms of training. We've done a lot of training of counselors. We've done a lot of training in community of communicators. So I think it is listed there. Chairperson, without wasting any time, I think I would like to close my portion so that I give to my colleagues to unpack their areas. It's just to reflect on what is it that is outstanding in this report. What are the challenges which I thought may be useful, given that we complain and say they are budget constrained, but we still achieve 98%. I thought that we should indicate some of the things that we have not been able to do. For instance, I think the honorable members last time, they did reflect that how do we test whether our information dissemination is impactful. Ideally, Chairperson, we should be able to have a budget to do that research. And at this point, we just disseminate information, but would love to have a research that tells us whether is it really impactful, and that is still a matter that is outstanding. We also are not able to increase this number of dialogues. And for instance, I think we believe that a lot of this gender-based violence, we need to invest in communicating. We need those dialogues in communities, and that is not enough. We've tried to do some, but I think because we are not able to bring those dialogues down to district level. I mean, some of the stories that come out from areas, I think recently in Tsendani, I mean, some of the conversation needs to take place in those communities. And we are not able to increase that dialogue and take it to... And lastly, Chairperson, we would love to increase the quantities of what we produce. I don't think it's enough, considering the population of South Africa, but we are doing the best as we can. So I think at this point, I will just request Gitu for Program 1 to highlight some of the areas of success in Program 1, and then followed by Program 2, the key highlights, and Program 3, the key highlights, and I think we will then take it from there.
Thank you very much, Phumla, and good afternoon to honorable members. Like Phumla has indicated, my name is Gijumit Semakane, and I am the acting DDG for corporate services, which is reflected as administration in our documents. When we look at administration, we realize that we have achieved all the targets, 100% of all the targets that we set for ourselves for the year under review. We were able to achieve them. But I just want to highlight some of the things that we are really proud of and which are the things that we have achieved. For 2016-17, we obtained a clean audit. And I must say it is the third time in a row. The previous 2 years also we got a clean audit like the auditors have indicated. And we have also managed to practice sound financial management processes and procedures for the year under review. We had a budget of 385 million rand and we spent 380.1 million, which is translated into 98 0.7%, which means we were able to manage our monies as they were allocated to us, and we did it well. The clean audit says it all for us. We maintained the vacancy rate of, on average, 8% throughout the financial year, which is below the target of Public Service Administration, which is 10%. And human resources and financial constraints have put a lot of pressure on the staff. And I think this is reflected in our financial report. But despite that, we were able to achieve 96% of our planned targets overall in the department, which means people were really put under pressure. But despite all those pressures that they were put under, they were able to perform as required. We also have a very effective wellness program to support staff in the organization, which is available 24/7, 365 days. And I think it really helps, because whenever people have got issues that are troubling them, they are able to contact this program and they are assisted. Our information system and hardware processes was available 95% or throughout the year, which means we didn't have a lot of downtime, and whenever we had to get into the system, it was always there, and that enabled us to do our work effectively. With regards to performance assessment, the year that is under review was a year that we really came with some innovation. We introduced what we call EPMDS, where we did away with paper-based evaluation. We just created that system, and it was done, I must hasten to say, it was done internally by our own IT staff. They were able to develop it. We didn't outsource it. We didn't get the consultant, and we are able to do it now online, and it makes our life very easy, and it makes it very efficient. We established the risk management committee. All along we didn't have that, but we were able to establish it, and it is fully functioning. We've got a committee, we've got an external chairperson that we have appointed, and we are on course, and we think all our things will be able to be will be able to monitor them effectively. Chairperson, I must conclude by indicating the challenges that we experienced. Our baseline budget is very, very inadequate, and this was as a result of what we suffered some 2 years, 3 years ago when we allocated some money to DOC for a startup in terms of human resources. We had to give them some money, and since that time, Treasury had never filled that gap, and then we are making do with what we have. But despite that, we are trying our best to make do with the little that we have. And there is also an issue of poor maintenance of building and non-upgrade of IT infrastructure because of financial constraints. I think in all our submissions when we came to you, we did indicate that the building that we are occupying, we have to pay rent, but we don't get increase of the funds from Treasury, but that is something that we are facing. And like the Minister has already indicated, we had some challenges with filling of the SMS posts, and that had a negative impact on our being fully functional. But at least we are making progress, and the Minister has already indicated that at the beginning of the year next year, the majority of those posts will be filled. I think on that note, that is how I conclude the presentation on administration, which is known as corporate services. Thank you very much.
Are you paying rent in your own building?
We have leased the building, Chairperson, so we have to pay. It's not our, we don't own the building.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you owned the building.
No, we don't own the building.
All right. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Chairperson, I seem to get a sense that I did cover most of the successful issues in Program 2 and Program 3, and also the issue around the budget. I seem to have covered it. I don't know, in the interest of time, whether I should pause here so that we can take questions, or whether, yeah.
No, we'll have to break for lunch. And then questions will come when we're back. I'm told there is a working lunch for the minister deputy, members of parliament, the CFOs and AD, acting DGs, working lunch somewhere else. They say it's old assembly restaurant. And then other people will remain here. So I was told that there is that working lunch. We are coming back at two. We are coming back at 2:30. Lunch will be fine. 30 minutes lunch will be fine. Yeah.
PMG.